All right, we're going to call a meeting to order. Thanks, everyone. We do have a couple of members that are hopefully on their way here, but because we're starting with a couple of presentations from our awesome hosts, I figured we'll get started. And we have so many guests here, I didn't want to keep y'all waiting. With that, I call the meeting to order, our June 9th meeting of the Law Enforcement and Public Safety Committee. I would first begin by entertaining a motion to approve the minutes of the May 5th meeting. All right, we've got a motion from Hewitt, second from Hansett. Any discussion on the minutes? All in favor?
Aye.
Great.
Any opposed? The minutes are approved unanimously. We are hosted tonight by Nancy Schmidt from the Department of Probation and Kim Mapes from the Restorative Justice and Community Empowerment Center. So I really appreciate you sharing with us a little bit about your programs here. This is kind of the whole thing of having the committee go on the road and check out some of the different departments to help us learn and to see how we can help. So with that, I'll hand it to you, and maybe you can give us for a few minutes a little bit of overview.
Sure, thank you. So I'm Nancy Schmidt, and I am the Probation Director and Staff and OBI Coordinator for Ulster County, and Kim and I talked about this, and I'm going to do just a really brief overview of some of the programs we do, and one of the last things is I will talk about the Raise the Age division in our budget, and which the Restorative Justice Center is part of that whole project, and then I'll turn it over to Kim to talk a little bit more about that. So just generally, probation is a preventative program. It's intended to address issues that come up early on, whether it's with youth or adults. So we work with juveniles, sometimes before they get to the family court system, and we work with adults as they enter the criminal court system. So we do both. Probation is different than parole. Probation is a county agency, and again, it's intended to be preventative, reduce recidivism, help people get back on track, help them get resources, maybe treatment or education and training to help them get on a path so that they get out of the system and hopefully never are incarcerated or placed or restricted in any way. Parole, on the other hand, is a state agency, and that's not us, but parole is what happens when someone goes to state prison, which is a sentence of more than a year, and when they get released early, they may have a period of parole supervision, or if they get sentenced to so many years plus post-release supervision, that's parole. That's a whole different thing, and those are adults with much more serious felony charges. We work with people who have misdemeanor offenses, low-level felonies, and we engage them in treatment and, again, education and whatever services we can to help them turn the corner with where they're headed. With juveniles, we have a lot of preventive programs, so we start early when youth are engaging in behaviors that might be problematic in a family. We'll work with them. The law requires us to do diversion, what's called diversion with those cases, and we work with them and provide services with the hope that they'll never go to court. Juvenile delinquent cases, those are the same kind. They may have a charge, but if it's appropriate, when we assess them and meet with them and their family, we may, again, do a diversion program like a restorative justice program, which Kim will talk a little bit about. So there's lots of services that are coming out of this department, and we're working with lots of agencies to do that. So that's just one division. I just want to mention we do get GIVE funding, which is a gun involved violence elimination funding from the state. Our funding is actually used in a domestic violence program, the IPVI program that's out of the DA's office in the city of Kingston. There's a few other police agencies involved in that as well, and it's expanding across the county. So we are involved in that as well. We have offices in Kingston, New Paltz, Ellenville, Saugerties. We also have a pretrial release program, and everybody's heard of bail reform. We had this before bail reform, but this is something in which a judge can place someone on pretrial release, and again, we supervise them, help them engage in whatever treatment or services they might need in order to keep them out of the jail. We have a different type of clientele since bail reform because it kind of shifted the population. So the people we used to get are released. The people that used to go to jail with bail set, many of them we get with pretrial release orders. So they're complex cases. They have lots of needs. I did give a handout to Nettie. I only had 10, so the legislators will get those, and it's in much more detail. One of the big programs we have that's part of the probation department, located over on Pearl Street, not here, is our Crime Victims Assistance Program. This is almost entirely grant funded, and we provide services to victims of sexual assault, domestic violence, any kind of violent crime. Again, we help them maybe with housing or safety planning. We also accompany them to court. We'll accompany them to the hospital if needed. Really amazing program. We have a counselor at both of the colleges in the county. Lots of services that they provide. That in and of itself, I could talk for an hour on just what Crime Victims does. Amazing workers, really great staff. We have a Stop DWI program that is funded by the fine money that comes from the DWI convictions. And again, it's a prevention program. We fund some police agencies to do task force work. When they're out, they're seen. It helps to reduce the number of people drinking and driving. We do radio ads, go to school programs, lots of prevention efforts, and it's actually been effective, shown to be effective in reducing the number of DWIs over the years. Then my final topic is the Raise the Age law, which took effect in October of 2018. This part of the building was renovated as part of Raise the Age because we were anticipating the 16 and 17 year olds that previously were in the criminal court system would be coming to the probation system, essentially for us to work with, provide services, programming in-house, and expanding the number of staff we have in services. Like Kim's position was created as part of that funding initiative, which is funded by the state. Part of the building renovation was and is funded by the state. And this is an L-shaped building that wraps around probation that was storage pretty much for the county, and it got converted to the beautiful space it is now. We'll do a little tour after, but we have the conference rooms here, and then the other part of the L is the offices for the staff that staff this. And this added funding so we could do some programming that we hadn't been able to do before. We've expanded restorative justice programming. We had mental health services. We're going to resume that hopefully again in 2023. And before I turn it over to Kim, there's one other program that we operate, and that's the community service program. And that's when the court imposes a period, days of community service for someone to do work in the community in lieu of incarceration. And that can be as a conditional discharge with so many hours of community service or probation with so many hours of community service. And we operate that program, which is now at Development Court. Did I leave anything out, Matt?
The only thing I would add is over the past several years, Nancy has made a great effort to diversify our staff. We have many more Spanish-speaking, both in crime victims and probation, to help us with that population. So it's been a very big help for us.
This is definitely on our radar. This is Valerie, our deputy director. And I'm going to turn it over to Kim to talk about the restorative justice program.
Good evening. I'm Kim Meeks. I'm the Youth and Family Engagement Coordinator for the Restorative Justice. In conjunction with the probation officers to provide services for the at-risk youth that come through. One of the programs that we have here is interactive journaling. We also have the Council for Boys and Young Men, which we're currently doing a Young Men of Honor group. We also have a girls' circle, and a new girls' circle will come up soon. We also have Photography Now, which you'll see in the back. There's photos in the back and in the lobby, which the youth that are part of that group took these pictures, and they are for sale, and all proceeds go to the youth. And we also do virtual art. Some of the events that are coming up soon, Monday we will have a Civil Service 101, and OET is providing information to the community to teach them how to navigate the civil service test and what to expect, the fees, if they qualify, and that sort of thing. So that will come up this Monday. We also are going to do an event hidden in plain sight where a part of the Restorative Justice Center will be transformed into a bedroom, and they'll hide drugs, and you should be able to learn how to decipher what drug paraphernalia is in this room. So that will be coming up in August. Some of the restorative justice programming that we have is the Restorative Justice Technical Violation. Oh no, I'll get it wrong. Violation of probation, where if they're in violation, they can have a circle and not get violated. But it's for minor things, nothing big. We also have the Restorative Justice in Schools. Right now it's in Kingston, Saugerties, Ellenville, and Walk Hill. We also do Restorative Justice Training. The Restorative Justice Training is for the community, and currently, because the legislator voted that all staff that works with criminals have to be trained, we're in the process of training all the staff for Ulster County. So that's going in effect right now. One of the other programs we have is Restorative Ulster, and you'll see I gave you pamphlets for that, and the 180 program. Those are the most current and active programs that we have right now. The Restorative Ulster is for young adults 18 to 26 that have committed a misdemeanor or nonviolent felony, and it comes through David Clegg's office. So those referrals come directly from him. And then the 180 program is for the 7 to 17-year-olds as a diversion to probation, and they can do a restorative circle. So,
did I miss anything? I think it's a lot.
Does anyone have any questions on the committee or our guest legislators? No.
I did have one question for Coordinator Mapes. You mentioned training all the staff working with criminals. Can you say more about that?
The restorative justice training?
Yeah.
Yes. So Family Woodstock does all our trainings. They do they do the circles, and they actually do all the input when running those programs. I just oversee the program. So the staff, all staff that are working with, did I say that right? Yeah, with criminals. They would have to be, right, or they have to get trained in restorative justice. So I believe we started in January. We have actually a training coming up on Monday, and I have sent emails out. So anybody here that's on that list, answer my email. Mari already took the training. He already took the training. So, yes. And then we'll go back to community trainings, and we'll send out it's usually on the Ulster County webpage, and then I'll start telling you when the community training start again. But it's trained in restorative circles on how to facilitate a circle.
Thank you.
You said that you have restorative programs in 4 school districts right now?
Yes.
Are you open to more school districts?
If we have the funding for it. That's a Nancy question.
It all comes down to funding.
If I can follow up on that, do the school districts, do we fund the program entirely, and the school districts receive that, you know,
right,
free of charge?
Right. Actually, one school district as of September is going to take on their own, because they found it to be beneficial and want to have it full time, so they're taking it on their own. So we're going to be expanding. What were we giving? Kingston only had 1 or 2 days, which just wasn't
Kingston
enough.
Kingston wants more days. Yes.
So they're going to get who's?
So the Ellenville is going to get a full time person. They're hiring a person. Actually, they're hiring the person that was doing it already. So she will be a full time Ellenville staff. And then that leaves these two schools, Walk Hill, Kingston, and Saugerties. And then we have to hire a new person full time. And Kingston is one of the ones that want a full time person.
And for years leading up to the pandemic, we had been going around to the schools presenting about this, letting them know that this was available. And if people had expressed interest, we would look into it. But some schools had other programs they were implementing, or they had plans that they wanted to do something different. So certainly if somebody had said, yeah, I want on board, we would include them.
Okay, great.
I have a question about this space. When you're doing, how do you, or is it even an issue to manage the separation between the probation side and the restorative justice side? If there are kids that are coming here that are part of the circles, like, are they coming at different times than folks that might be meeting a probation officer?
It is a huge juggling act, and it's unfortunately, Kim spends too much time trying to figure some of that out, but we must try and separate the youth from the adults. During the pandemic, we had issues with, we have a lot of cubicles and we had to try and space people out, so we were having to use this space some of the time to see the adult clients, but they're not supposed to be mixed, so we had to do certain times are for this group and certain times are for that group. Just today, we got asked to do something involving adult cases during a time where we have a huge number of juveniles coming in, and we had to say no, because there's just no way to manage the juveniles coming in that entrance, and then how do we separate them? So, yeah, we do a lot of juggling.
And this room divides, yep. So that wall comes and it's two parts.
Got it, okay. Any other questions?
You said you were expecting an increase in 16 and 17-year-olds after raise the age, and this was renovated. Did you see the increase?
So what happened for our caseload is that they pretty much leveled off. What the effect of the pandemic on the number of cases we were getting in brought pretty much everything down, but because we had those additional 16, 17-year-olds, instead of the juvenile caseloads dropping, they just leveled off. Starting in 21, we started to see like some real, what would you call it? And we'd have these periods of time that all of a sudden we'd get 10, and we had been seeing them just trickle in, and then all of a sudden we'd get a whole bunch. So, yeah. September, last September, when everyone went back to school, that unfortunately was a bad time. So they will probably start to rise, but they've been fairly stable.
Thank you.
Well, if there aren't any other questions, I think we can move ahead. Thank you so much for sharing with us. We really, really appreciate it. And anyone who wants to hang around after the meeting, we'll do a quick tour of the facility. Thank you.
Thank you.
So with that, we can jump into resolutions. The first resolution number 189, establishing a policy for prohibiting the housing of incarcerated individuals transferred from facilities outside of Ulster County, the no more incarceration for profit policy. Can I see a motion to discuss? Motion from, yep, and second by Hewitt. So I did speak with the author of the legislation today, and he asked for us to put it off for another month. I'm inclined to, agree with that, unless anyone has anything further they want to say about it. Legislator Erner.
Can you share anything about why we're putting it off?
I I would have to let Legislator Maloney speak specifically to that, but I think that he is hoping for a level of conversation that hasn't happened yet. I believe we could have had some of that conversation tonight, which I shared that sentiment with him, but that's how the conversation went.
Okay.
Yeah. So with that, I think we can take no action and just move on to the next. Oh, sorry, Sheriff Figueroa.
To discuss where we're at. I mean, I have not a conversation with the legislator, but I understand the intent of the resolution. But like I have said before to the legislator about the operational duties of an elected sheriff, which there are emergencies that occur. This office and this administration did do board ends the year prior or the year of the pandemic because the county, we didn't know where our funds, where we were going to be. But I had assured the legislature that I will not be accepting board ends in any loud or large amount. There are emergencies that happen amongst counties that we must take folks in, just like if something happens in our county and we have to ship them off to another county. And waiting for a monthly meeting with the legislature takes the operational duties of the sheriff away. So I'm not going to do that, but what I will do if the legislature, and I will talk to Legislator Maloney, if the legislature wants perhaps a report of how many board ends are in the county jail, then obviously that's something that I'm willing to do because I understand what the intent here is.
So I'll just share from my perspective, and this is a little bit evolved since the last time we discussed this here, but I personally couldn't see myself supporting this without enough changes to allow the sheriff's office the flexibility to handle these kinds of emergencies. Because when you have someone that might be incarcerated in Greene County or in Dutchess County or wherever it is, and they, if they, for whatever reason, they can't be housed in the jail that's more local to them, this might be the next most local jail, and I don't think it would be very compassionate to push them farther away from their families, and I wouldn't want a neighboring county to push our residents farther from their families. Any other questions?
And I agree with you. I think we need a little flexibility in there. Yep. I don't think yes or no. I think we have to come up with a plan that, because we never know what's going to happen. So.
Right. All right, so we'll just move on to the next resolution here. I don't think we need to vote on anything regarding this.
You want to postpone it or no action?
I think we'll just take no action.
Okay.
Thank you. Resolution number 308, declaring Ulster County's intent to act as lead agency under New York State Environmental Quality Review Act, CEQRA, for the purpose of constructing a government operations center and appurtenances to be located at Paradis Lane in New Paltz. This is from the Department of Emergency Services. I would like a motion to discuss, please. Motion from Hansett.
I'll second.
Second from Lopez. All right. Everett, do you want to take the lead on kind of giving us a little bit of an overview here? I know we have a team here who's been involved in it, which I'm very impressed by.
Presentation.
Are we doing a presentation?
Yeah.
Okay. About how long do you...
10 minutes.
Okay, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So you want us to sit up there?
You can considering there's probably more of you than there are of us, I don't know how that would work.
All right. I'm going to introduce the team. I'm Rick Alfondre. Alfondre Architecture. Our offices are in New Paltz in our LEED Platinum Net Zero building. And I've been in practice for 32 years. I live in High Falls with my family, and I've lived in Ulster County for most of the last 46 years. We're working with Urban Architects. Urban are the lead architecture firm for this project. Christopher Young is the project architect, and John Montaigne is the project engineer from GPI. Leading the civil aspect of GPI's work, and GPI is also doing the mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and there are other sub-consultants for the project. Services, Executive, County Exec's Office, Planning, obviously, and others since the end of last year, every week. And in between, a lot of other work has been done. And so we've, and in that process, we've also looked at the programming for the facility, and we've gone through a major winter storm event that has informed the programming for the facility, and also worked on some preliminary designs of the building to check how the building will fit on the various sites. And towards that end, we've landed on the Parity site. You want to talk a little bit about the process or the criteria and some of the other things that went into it, please?
Sure. I'll, we don't have a screen so that I can show everybody our selection process.
Well, we'll send you the slides.
We will get our
list.
Nettie.
So Dennis was very, very instrumental at the very beginning of this process. The county already had an idea of some of the basics that they wanted for site selection. There was a minimum size of a parcel, there were some requirements for looking at utilities. You know, obviously one of the most important things for any kind of government or emergency operations center is communications, both hard communications being 911 trunk lines that Verizon has, and then also Wi-Fi and broadband. The other thing are other utilities that are really important. Power can't go down, so redundant electric power was very important. And then other utilities that would be looked at would be water and sewer and other things like that that you would need for any government building. On top of that, looking at ownership, we looked at properties that were either available on the market. Obviously, the first criteria would be, does the county already own it or have access to it? So that got a high ranking. And then other properties that the county was aware of that could probably meet the needs were looked at. The range of area that was looked at was just north of the Kingston area all the way down to the New Paltz area, and out to the county line on, along the river, and then partway west. Primarily looking for sites that could be easily accessible also, that were not in congested areas, so on and so forth. The process looked at, and I'll go to the list so that I can just read it off to everybody. The process looked at, easier when it's on screen. It looked at criteria that included safety, environmental screening, utilities, as I just mentioned. Site characteristics is kind of a unique thing. We're looking at sites that not only have the minimum acreage, but also have a length and width ratio that would be big enough to actually get a building on and everything else with it. You also don't want things where you've got steep, ravines in the middle of it, wetlands and other things. Accessibility, as I mentioned before, and then availability. Those were all based on a selection criteria sheet, and I know you will not be able to see this, but I just want to identify that there is a rather robust criteria sheet that was used to evaluate every single site. After we went through that process, it was possible then to take the sites that we had and put them into an overall ranking sheet. And what you see on here are the 10 sites that we looked at. We were originally tasked with looking at 6. As we got into that, it became apparent that there were other criteria and other sites that would also lend themselves to this. Even though there are only 10 on here, there were probably 20 sites in total that Dennis's office helped us look at and did initial screening on, and those that really didn't meet some of the main criteria got chopped off, but we couldn't get it down below 10, so we looked at 10 sites. All 10 sites were looked at for all of the criteria. Most of those, all but 3, went as far as having detailed site development plans drawn up for them, locating a building, locating parking, locating all the utilities, and then cost estimating for that site portion of it. At the same time that was going on, and Christopher can talk about it a little bit, there was additional work that went on for the programming of the building itself. The original criteria that was provided in the RFP was vetted out, and Christopher can go into that more, looked at all of the space requirements for that, and the footprint of the building and the requirements kind of got tweaked as we went through the process and we're looking at each one of the sites. And then additional criteria for safety were also evaluated, setbacks that are required from a building to make sure that it has enough distance from parking for blast protection and things like that, that led to criteria of the site. Through this process, those 10 sites were narrowed down to two sites. The one site is the Paradise Lane site. The other one is actually the Golden Hill site where the existing Department of Health building is. And the Golden Hill site really would be an adaptive reuse of that existing building. It's not a new building there, but just whether or not that building, which is somewhat underutilized right now, could be retrofitted. So that evaluation led to then a determination that the Paradise Lane site that we're all talking about tonight is clearly the best site for flexibility, for development. The only constraint on the Paradise Lane site that will come up in the environmental review would be the fact that it used to have an orchard on it. Not unlike any other orchard properties throughout the county, you're gonna have some pesticides that you have to deal with. It is in a brownfields program right now, which is a program that if you're a private developer, you can get some tax breaks and other things to help you with that. It's a property that's bigger than what we need for the GOC-EOC building. So it does lend itself to being able to be subdivided for other uses as well. And so that's where we're at on that. And I think what I'll do is I'll just turn it over to Christopher quickly. He can talk about how the building program has evolved over the same period since late last year.
Thank you, John. So when we started on this back in October, we were given from the county list of their program requirements, the spaces, both what it's going to be used for, their own expectation for how much space would be needed. And to the greatest extent we could, we really kind of kept as closely as we could to those parameters. But there were a couple things that came along the way. There were a few items, the quiet room for the call dispatchers to kind of decompress after a certain time, or a record room. It just hadn't been part of the initial list when they were kind of compiling what all was needed. Back to the ice storm and how that kind of put in like a real-time run through of what really happens and what's needed, both not just for the, on the call center side, but on the emergency operations center side. So there was additionally a little bit of kind of extra space that needed to be allowed for that. So we did in fact find that the building itself needed to be a little bit larger than originally assumed. But again, I think we kind of did everything we could to keep it as tight as we possibly could. Even still, there was an enlargement for a footprint that to give John and his team a bit of an extra challenge for finding an appropriate site. But in the end, Paradise Lane certainly, as you mentioned, came out on top of that. Large part to the fact that it's a flat site undeveloped, so it kind of makes that a bit easier. Even though Golden Hill was our sort of secondary runner-up, it would involve relocating the department and buying a space for that or in terms of moving them and time issues there. Paradise Lane, the redundancy for electric service, the redundancy for Verizon broadband, extremely compelling, knowing kind of what the emergency department needs would be.
Yeah, of all of the sites, that's the only site that has been serviced by two different Verizon offices, one Newburgh, one Kingston, and two different feeds from Central Hudson are very close, one in South Ohioville, one right there on Paradise. And the Paradise site has the future potential to probably interconnect to the Thruway interchange. We're looking at about 6 acres, 5 to 6 acres, that can be subdivided off and into a, so the remainder of the property is, the property is about 54 acres or something,
57.
The remainder of the developable land is about 22 acres. So that can be developed into a solar farm, housing, or some other uses, either sold or somehow developed. So the purchase price reflects the fact that there's future useful development opportunity on that property. The and yes, building new, we're gonna, it's much easier for us to achieve an ultra energy efficient and healthy building. Certainly we could do a great building with rehab, but that's, it's never gonna be the same, no doubt. There's another benefit to that. Oh, in the Brownfields program, there's two things about the Brownfields program. One is that it provides permanent indemnification to the owner. So even though it is a polluted site, it is soil contamination. Once it's abated on a particular portion, that owner has permanent indemnification. So even though the county can't take the tax credits for the portion, so you can subdivide off the portion that you're going to use that goes into its own unit, as the DEC calls it. We can abate the soil contamination on that site, and the remainder of the site doesn't have to be abated right away. That can wait to some extent. It's paused until such time as the development plan for that site comes forth. So it's, while it seems like it is an issue, it has to be managed, and there's studies and costs that have to be applied to it. It's not insurmountable by any means, and all of the other benefits of this site, we feel pretty strongly that it's the right property.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions from folks on the committee first, and then our legislators on the committee?
Since we were on the topic of brownfields, would there be financial help from the federal government or state on the abatement of the contaminants?
Good question. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, we do know that, for example, the abatement costs associated with brownfields have tax credits. So, from a private developer, there is basically a write-off of those costs. So whatever you spend on abatement within some limits, and the limits are based on the total project cost, you can use tax credits to essentially cover that abatement, which makes the discussion with respect to what do we do with the remainder of the site much more robust in terms of getting an interested developer, because it's in the Brownfields program.
Or developers.
Or developers.
You might have a private solar developer, yeah. You might have a private or not-for-profit housing developer such as RUFCO that can take advantage of the tax credits as part of that work. As far as any support for the county, I don't think so, but I don't know. It's worth investigating.
And what we're looking at now as to whether or not any of the rehabilitation or remediation that takes place at the county expends money, whether those tax credits are transferable to a private developer, even though the county can't use them, can they be used essentially as an incentive to a private developer?
Great.
And I would add that we've done a substantial amount of research here, including multiple conversations with essentially those folks that at the Department of Environmental Conservation that are head of the Brownfield program. And I think when we've provided new material for the resolution, I think we did provide you about 4,000 pages of environmental review.
Certainly felt that way.
So if anybody wants to read that, enjoy. Some of my staff have read it. I've looked at it. But the short answer is there's an enormous amount of data associated with the site.
If I can ask a question about the cost associated with the environmental remediation, I see an estimate between 800 and a million. Can you speak to how you arrived at that estimate?
Sure, I can speak to that. The way that you manage pesticides within the DEC program is you actually burn it and stockpile it on site. What's in the soil are really heavy metals. They don't transport. They're not, you don't have to worry about water washing them away. And because of that, and that's why they just sit there, that's why the DEC is not that concerned, as Rick had said, that we'll do our unit, which is the property that we're looking to develop. And what we'll do is we'll take the material that has some contamination in it, and we will find areas on our site to vermin it up, and then you put a topsoil lens over it, and then you can plant it. All right? So we'll just make it part of the landscape. It's the cost for that we're talking about. We have a cost in there for stripping the material, stockpiling it, shaping it, capping it, landscaping it, and then there's testing. So we calculated approximately what the cubic yards of material would be based on the all of the studies that have been done. CT Mail Associates has done most of the analytical testing right now, and they calculated the depth of soil that would have to be removed, and that's what we based our engineering estimate on.
And you know from past projects what that removal itself costs?
That is correct.
Okay.
There's nothing unique about the earthwork operation itself. It's moving dirt just like you would on any other site.
Understood.
So you're going to strip off the material, and you're going to move it to an area, and you're going to stop, burn.
Dennis?
I just would want to add that we don't forget there is a abandoned underground oil storage tank on the site, and that would also have to be removed. There's testing on that tank. So that we're comfortable in terms of what that removal would be.
And that's included in the
yep.
estimate that we see
There's
in
no
the
oil.
Third whereas.
It's been empty
right.
for
yeah.
a very, very long time. It was just a heating oil tank for a small building.
Okay. And those buildings I saw in the data, they're all gone.
Right. Everything's gone down
yep.
to the concrete foundations.
Okay. Any other questions? Legislator Erner.
Just a follow-up to that one. I'm sitting on the Environment Committee, which meets next. Can you say more about the metals? Is there any possibility to reclaim any of those materials usefully?
Well, when we talk about metals, these are, if you think about a pesticide is sprayed on.
Uh-huh.
The sprayed on product itself is uses a metal for the insecticide. It's arsenic and a few other things. It's not in any kind of a form that you could capture. Separated, for example, from the regular soil. It's sprayed on just like you would do in your own garden if you were to spray pesticide out. But it's many, 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 many years of it in an orchard situation that allows it to concentrate. So
right.
it's not like we could recycle that or anything like that.
There's probably some method that's an astronomical expense.
So,
go ahead, Dennis.
I just want to speak to the resolution that's in front of us, which is the lead agency designation. And the lead agency designation is a process used under the State Environmental Quality Review Act that basically places the agency most responsible for a project or has the most things that it can control with respect to the project in charge of the environmental review. And since the county is generally exempt from local zoning, we have to go through what they call a balance of public interest test. We would be the agency, the county would be the agency, and in this instance, the county legislature would be the agency that would go through that process. And this has been done in the past. We've also had conversations with the town of New Paltz where the project lies. They're okay with it right now in terms of us being the agency. We would file the necessary papers. There's 30 days in which to respond. We don't anticipate any challenges to the county acting as lead agency.
Legislator Hewitt.
This reminds me of the demolition of the jail, and I voted against it because of the lead paints and the asbestos that exists in the building. I don't understand why that was a negative declaration, and can you explain, is this a positive declaration or a negative declaration?
As the lead agency right now, we haven't made a determination as to whether or not it's positive or negative. We'll go through the environmental review process. We'll go through the outreach to the community in terms of community concerns and comments. And we'll, from those work, we would make the determination as to whether or not it's positive or negative.
Yeah, and if I can just follow on that, we had voted previously a while ago to be on something that set us up similarly on that Golden Hill on the question there. So this is like the first step that for that project was months ago, and we might get a resolution regarding the actual determination months from now on this. And so this, if you think of it as a little bit farther, that's much farther ahead in the process. Yeah. All right, any other questions? Otherwise I'll call a question on.
I have two more.
Go ahead, please.
And I'm a big supporter. Sheriff Figueroa gave us tour of the other emergency center, which is very small. Some of our colleagues have been talking about diversity in our county as far as geography. I'm wondering why you didn't look further south of New Paltz.
Mostly the infrastructure and vehicular access to it's somewhat central. I call New Paltz the heart of the Hudson Valley, but that's me. It's somewhat central and the county.
Also, in the emergency operations, we saw from the pandemic that we can run out of food very quickly because of supply chains. Is there any food emergencies being thought about through this center? Maybe Dennis, you might know.
I can say that with respect to this project, the answer would be no. But with respect to food security, there is a separate brownfield. There's a separate food security process running through the legislature right now in terms of a use of ARPA funds to take a very hard look at food security. Amanda Laval from our office, working with the Department of Environment and others, is leading that work right now, and it's running through the it ran through the ARPA committee. But I will assure you that there is a concerted look at food security issues that are directly related to what's happened with respect to COVID-19.
Great, thank you. I saw Amanda's presentation.
Yeah,
we participate in that as well. My deputy, Mike Madison, is on that.
Nice. As far as the communication connection?
No, as far as the...
The planning.
The planning.
Awesome, thank you.
Cool. And I'll just say before we vote, and actually, Chris, your comment is a perfect setup for it. You know, I think the events of the last couple of years have reshaped the way a lot of us think about public safety. I think, you know, when we look at the ice storm, you know, that was, you know, having the redundancy. Up until the ice storm, I was planning on coming here and saying it should be in Kingston, all right? And then the ice storm happened, and Kingston got whooped, and... You know, I can see the need for redundancy makes a lot of sense. I will also say, and I think this might have, you know, part of Legislator Hewitt's point, you know, there's a lot going on in terms of the way we talk about the environment and the way that we talk about our future on this earth. One area that is without any opportunity to argue, because it is just a fact, whether you feel one way or the other about climate change, is that the response to climate change is going to be in many ways a public safety response. And hardening our infrastructure, you know, while we need to get off of fossil fuels, while we need to change the way that we produce food, we need to accept that there is an inevitability that will require hardened infrastructure. And I'm proud that this project will bring Ulster County closer in that direction. So with that, I'll call the question. All those in favor of Resolution 308?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Any opposed?
Craig has stepped away.
Okay, and we still have quorum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, great. All right, so that resolution is unanimous. The second resolution regarding this property, Resolution 309, amending Capital Project 607, Government Operations Center, and authorizing the acquisition of real property located at Paradis Lane in the town of New Paltz for the purpose of siting a government operations center and authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute any and all documents required for said acquisition from the Department of Public Works, Buildings, and Grounds. May I have a motion to discuss?
I'll make the motion.
All right, we got Hewitt on the motion. We got Hanson on the second. Is there anything specific on this that anyone would like to, from the executives team or the consulting team, to speak to? Yeah, that's what I kind of figured. I considered blocking them, but the funny thing about a block is you need to vote twice on a block, and there's only two things to vote on here, so it doesn't really make sense.
This is for the sale of the 57 acres?
Yeah. I will say, you know, perhaps we can speak for a moment to the cost of the acquisition, if for no other reason than because I know it's going to come up in our more fiscally oriented committees that will see this resolution later this month. So can someone please speak to the cost of the acquisition?
So I can try to take that. There's no
way. You start off well.
There you go. So we went through an initial discussion with the property owner in terms of value. As part of our due diligence, we began our work on all of the things that we knew about the property, including the environmental work. We began to gather that data. There was a letter of intent signed relative to acquiring the property that allowed us to essentially move through that process. The county did hire an independent third-party appraisal for the property. That appraisal was done. The estimated value from that appraisal was hypothetical case. A hypothetical case with respect to appraisals means that there are certain assumptions made relative to that appraisal. In this case, the appraiser made the assumption that the property was clean at the time it was appraised. So the $4.3 million reflected a clean property associated with the property. We went back knowing what we knew about the expected cost associated with remediation of the property, somewhere between $800,000 to $1 million from our consultants, and went back with a second offer relative to that appraisal. So the current offer reflects the value that was established as part of the appraisal with the understanding that there was a hypothetical case within that appraisal, and I think we gave you that appraisal as well.
So the second offer is adjusted down to reflect the delta of that's filled by the cost here. Okay.
So there was also, before pursuing a conversation with the seller about the entire property, we had looked at just the 5 or 6 acres in the northwest, and then 5 or 6 acres just south of that quadrant, which would have required additional road work off of Parity's, and they came back with, was it 2.5?
No, it's over three.
Over three.
Yes.
It was, now obviously that had never been appraised, and we said, well, or I shouldn't say we, the executive office said, you know, it's going to have to go through an appraisal. But, so we were, again, it's, without going through all of this process, the 6 acres that the county is going to actually use has a certain value, and the residual 20 developable, or 22, has a certain value. So even though the county has to spend 3.5 now, there's $1.5 million in reserve, so to speak, for future development potential on that property, in my not so humble estimate. And I'm going to guess it's probably going to be higher by the time the day is done, you know, by the time this comes about, even with the potential recession. There's huge demand for housing and for renewable energy in the Hudson Valley. Those two alone are very likely, I don't want to say slam dunk, but reasonable uses for that site. So, you know, it's money in now, some money out later. The net is whatever, 1.5 to 2.5 for the useful piece that we need.
Thank you. Any questions on the acquisition, Chris?
Are there existing apple trees living?
No, the site is cleared of all trees. It's fields now.
Thank you.
The site was more recently, I believe, hay for pasture land. It was used for pasture land. I would say most of the site, not all of the site.
Thank you.
There are some wetlands to the southern portion of the site that aren't, they're just in their existing wetland condition. There's trees in there, but they're not orchard trees.
And that's the undevelopable?
That's the undeveloped area portion of it.
Thanks.
Right. And New Paltz has a 100-foot buffer. They're federal wetlands, but they have a 100-foot buffer break also.
Awesome. Any other questions? All right, then I'll call the question on resolution number 309. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Thank you, everyone who came for that. I really appreciate all of your work on this, and I will not fault you if you decide to leave the meeting now.
Thank you.
Craig,
thank you all very much.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Doyle. I think he's, is he supposed to say?
Well, no, yeah. The next meeting.
Oh. Okay.
I didn't print 4,000.
All right, so we can move on here. I'm just going to jump right into it. Resolution number 311, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to amend a contract with the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services for Alternative to Incarceration Program, Department of Probation. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Motion.
Motion from Hans, a second from Hewitt.
It's like deja vu.
Yeah, right? You got it, and then they switch, and it's all. All right. Nancy, do you want to give us a little bit of an overview?
This is the state funding we get for our community service program and our pretrial program. It's not a whole lot, but we've gotten it for many years, and it helps support the program.
Okay. Any questions? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
311 is unanimous. Resolution 312, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $53,388 entered into by the county with LexisNexis, Ulster County Sheriff. May I have a motion to discuss?
Motion.
All right, motion from Hewitt, second from Hansett. Sheriff Figueroa, you want to give us an overview?
LexisNexis is basically an investigative tool. We do a lot of backgrounds for our own employees when they get hired, police officers, or even our civilian staff. And that's the mechanism. We also use that for criminal investigations. For example, if an individual committed a crime and we don't know where he resides, LexisNexis will have previous addresses, and usually neighbors would know where the individual either moved to or may know a family member. So it's an investigative tool.
All right. Any questions? Legislator Erner.
Yeah, I've heard of, I remember using LexisNexis back in the day with like college or school type research.
Me too.
is there any connection or is there any sort of consolidation that could be possible with your office, Sheriff, and like university or other public facilities?
No. Our cases are confidential in some instances due to the nature of being in public safety.
So the database is, because I used it when I got my degree in political science, like I would look up case law.
You can use it for that as well.
Right, okay.
Sure.
Yeah, I suspect I didn't have access to everything you guys do.
Make college more fun.
Yeah, right. Let's
so that it. Reminds me, it says here that it also is for research in kiosks. Do the prisoners have access to research as well?
They do. Yes, they do.
For
great
point,
you got that. Absolutely. For case law. Absolutely.
That's probably more like what I had access to in college, yeah. Yeah, exactly, yeah. All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, resolution 312 is unanimous. Resolution 313, approving the execution of a contract amendment for rates anticipated to exceed $50,000 entered into by the county with Securus Technologies LLC, formerly known as Securus Technologies Inc., with Ulster County Sheriff. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Motion.
Second.
Motion from Hansett. Second from Hewitt. Sheriff, I would.
So Securus is our phone system that we use for our incarcerated individuals. The rates are not going to go up. That's still going to remain 14 cents a minute, which is one of the lowest in the Hudson Valley for jails. We did this contract a few years ago. This extension is because we have the ability to get a program that's called Investigative Pro. Whenever you call a correctional facility to speak to someone or somebody calls out, there's always a automated response saying that the phone call can be recorded, and it usually is. The expectation of privacy when you're in jail is limited. And due to the staffing levels at the facility, when we have to review phone calls, we've had an uptick in some folks that are fighting each other in the jail, or something occurs out in maybe a shooting or a stabbing. Sometimes there are phone calls that are generated. This particular program with this extension is free. So instead of listening to the phone calls, all we have to do is put like a word, for example, stab. We put the word stab, and every individual that used the word stab, those phone calls will come up, and we can research and review it that way. And that's what the purpose of the extension is.
Any questions from the committee or anyone else? I'll just say two things. I'm still supportive of this. First thing, I'm very sensitive to the cost burdens that are put on folks that are incarcerated. I know that you are too. And it, so that it's a bit of a you know, bitter medicine to you know, endorse that in this case. The second thing is, I expect that we will be having more conversations about the use of AI in law enforcement in the years ahead. Voice recognition is probably the most advanced consumer level AI that we all have access to. You know, Siri on our phones is actually pretty powerful software and pretty accurate. I'm very concerned about the direction that this could go in. Voice recognition is one thing. You know, face recognition is definitely something that we'll be confronting, and it's very concerning. So I'm supportive of this, but I don't plan to be a carte blanche supporter of AI in law enforcement in the future, and I just want to make that clear.
I can assure you, Mr. Chair, that nor will I. I have limitations and concerns when it comes to this type of technology. However, public safety has a role in society. There are bad people. The reference to the first point regarding the cost, of course, getting the cheapest cost, at one point it was 21 cents a minute at the county jail. To get it down to 14 cents is, I think, was something that was good. During the holidays, these individuals have been incarcerated without seeing people in quite some time because of the pandemic. We gave them free phone calls, free video conferencing during holidays. We put money into their, from the proceeds, into their individual commissary funds so they can purchase things. And we did that because obviously we're trying to de-escalate. When you don't see some your family members for a long time, it has an effect. So we're very cognizant of that. As far as the information regarding to AI, I share your concerns. This office will not use it for anything other than the purposes of public safety. I'm sure in the future, the judges and the courts with case law are going to confront these issues, and the State Assembly and Senate would also be confronting this issue, so I'm sure there's more to come on that. But I can tell you that at this office, we'll be using it legally. And when it comes to public safety, my job is to assure that I use all the tools necessary to go after folks that commit crimes, and there are people that commit crimes.
Any further questions or discussion?
I just have a curiosity question.
Sure.
I understand the need for not having privacy on the phone calls. Is there ever a time when they do have private a right to private conversation?
Oh, absolutely. With their lawyers, mm-hmm. And there those are certain privileged conversations that are not listened to. The only time a phone call would be monitored or listened to if there's a criminal or a potential of a criminal issue that may. For example, there's folks that get jumped in the jail. There are gang members that call up and they talk by code and they want a specific individual that wants to get hit. And the only way we find out is by listening to the phone calls. If we don't, that individual's life is in jeopardy. We won't have the ability to move them to another pod in the jail. And so these are the issues that are that we in law enforcement and corrections have to face.
All right, I'll call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Resolution number 314, approving the execution of a contract for rates anticipated to exceed $50,000 entered into by the county with Trinity Service Group, Inc., Ulster County Sheriff. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll make the motion.
All right, motion from Hewitt,
second
from Hansett. Sheriff, would you like to give us an overview?
Well, first I would say that this contract was May 11th, 2018, before this administration took office. I'm not a fan of this particular vendor, and I know there's an RFP out for the county because their contract ends December of this year. And I know that the chair is also working with the sheriff's office and others regarding changing the way we deal with the kitchen and how it's staffed and how it's run, and I look forward to those conversations. Page 14 of the contract, and I'll give you a copy of this when I leave. The county employs one full-time cook for the officer's dining room. The vendor shall utilize the county's cook in providing services. Payroll for the county's cook shall be responsibility of the county. The vendor shall supervise the county's cook. The vendor shall be responsible to cover the county cook's time off, vacation, sick days, etc., with the vendor's paid employees. Upon retirement of the county's cook, the vendor shall provide an additional cook at their sole expense. The vendor may request a per meal increase should the county's cook retire during the term of this agreement. Adequate documentation of the vendor's increased cost shall be provided to the county, and that's exactly what this is. The cook retired, and now the vendor is taking over the responsibilities of the cook, hence the rate hike. And again, this contract ends at the end of this year, and you know, I don't know if we're going to go in-house in the future. And that might be a possibility when we move forward on this, but that is the purpose, and that is what occurred here in this resolution.
And then I'll just add to that what I had learned from kind of understanding the history here is when we went into that contract, we were adamant that we wanted to keep our cook. And so that's why the contract has that language in the first place, was to allow us to retain that employee. Any discussion or questions? All right, I'll call the question. All those in favor of resolution number 314?
Aye.
Aye. All right, resolution number 315, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $127,900 entered into by the county with Tyler Technologies, Inc. It says Ulster County Sheriff here, but I believe this is really emergency management.
Well, it's
or
a
is it
combination.
Okay.
Because it's Tyler is a Ulster County Sheriff contract. However, it is shared with emergency management as well as other entities throughout the law enforcement community. But I'll turn this over to.
Before you do that, let me take a motion to discuss, and then we'll go into that.
Motion.
Motion from Hewitt, second from Hansett. All right, Dr. Erickson.
Thank you. So the capital project is handled by the sheriff. But it's shared. We do have a Tower Technologies does our computer aided dispatch, as well as law enforcement records management, fire records management, mobile for law enforcement, and mobile for fire. So within all that, you know, we share a lot of those items. Back in 2017, when the contract was signed, and we started the build out. All law enforcement agencies except for two got on the system, and we also offered it up to all the fire services in the county, 49 of which are volunteer, one career. Within this, like I mentioned before, was law enforcement mobile and fire mobile. It was the law enforcement mobile took off right away with those law enforcement agencies as their vehicles are their offices. On the fire side of it, it's a little bit more, it's a larger hassle being that the fire apparatus, they're not in it all the time, and to outfit it with a computer system, a full computer system, isn't really necessary. At the time that we signed our contract, Crew Force and Shield Force was not something that was, it was newer, so we decided not to go with it right away. A lot of things, you know, want them to work out their bugs and so on. Now, Crew Force and Shield Force is built out, and we want to bring that to the county and have that available for fire and the law enforcement. It's going to be big on law enforcement. I think it's going to be even bigger on the fire service, because both are site licenses, so we don't have a limit on the licenses that we can use. But when you can put an iPad in a fire apparatus for a department that only has a $34,000 budget, rather than putting a $5,000 computer system, that's going to be big for them. The information sharing that goes along when the call comes into our 911 center, the CAD narrative, material safety data sheets, pre-plans of the facilities, all that stuff is now available at the fingertips of our fire service as law enforcement. This is big for them. So, you know, we're going to see more. Although the fire service is using mobile, the bigger departments that have larger budgets that could afford to put the computers in their apparatus and in their chief's vehicles, the small departments haven't been able to do that. So I think that this is going to be really big for them. So that's why I want to push this forward. Additionally, within this is text and 911. Our county has not been a text and 911 county. Having the text and 911 interface from Tyler is going to be big. There's an additional interface from InDigital that we're still currently working on. So there's a whole another portion to this. But you know, this is step one to get the text 911 from Tyler, so we have that interface in our Tyler CAD system.
Anything you'd like to add?
No, I think it's great. We discussed it, and I concur that this is big for law enforcement as well. In order to, you can actually be away from your vehicle and get the information on your phone. And sometimes that does happen in a county the size of the state of Rhode Island. So I think this is a great tool for both law enforcement and the fire service.
So would it be fair to say that another way of saying all of this is this gives you the ability to have a bring your own device mobile kind of platform, or being able to have it on your own device, like on a mobile iOS device?
Yeah, so the fire mobile and law enforcement mobile that we already have is Windows-based.
Right.
So we weren't able to use it on iOS or Android phones, right? This Crew Force, the Shield Force, is Android and iOS-based. So that will allow us now to get that to our cell phones or tablets, such as Android and iOS.
Great. Any questions? I think it sounds pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No texting and driving, though. Okay, I'm serious. Mario and I have talked about this. All right. All those in favor of resolution number 315?
Aye.
Aye. Great. And that concludes our formal business for tonight. Director Schmidt and Coordinator Mapes, if you would like to... once we get kind of settled here, if you want to give us kind of a quick tour, we would really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Great.
Thanks, sir.
And thank you, everyone who's not going on the tour. Thank you for being here. I really, really appreciate it.
Can I just add something?
Yes, please.
Last week, I attended the Sheriff's Awards dinner. It was a wonderful evening. Love to hear their stories. I think while we're going about our day and our work, and sometimes we forget what they do all day and all night. And it was nice to meet people, put names to faces, and see the young guys on the job and the older people on the jobs and hear their stories. And it was just a nice way, I think, especially with COVID and not having that for a while. So it was a very nice evening.
I'd like to add, I really appreciate what you brought to the table that day and what you said. And there were other legislators too, and I recognize the purpose and the importance of having government and how we work together to get things done in this county. It's a checks and balance, and that's what makes us do the jobs that we do. And so I appreciate you coming and saying your comments, as well as the other legislators that were there. So I know everybody couldn't make it, and some folks weren't feeling well, but I understand that, and we actually put that kind of last minute to them. But we haven't done it in 2 years, so it was a perfect opportunity, and the space was open to do it. And I again thank the members of the county legislature for representing and being there. And I appreciate everything that you do here every day. So thank you.
Thank you.
right. Motion to adjourn.
Yeah, please. Right. Important detail. Motion to adjourn.
Gina.
Yep.
I did
so it. Nice. Yeah. Second for Gina. All in favor?
Aye.
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 We are now.
Just one more thing.
Yes.
Sunday, the EMS.
Yeah, so Sunday, the Ulster County EMS Council, the chairman just left because he had to go to work. He's one of our 911 dispatchers.
Okay.
But they're doing the EMS awards a few weeks ago, the EMS week, and they're going to be presenting awards. One of our dispatchers was presented with the communication specialist awards.
Oh, great.
Help deliver a child.
Oh.
Over phone. Yeah.
So that takes some communication skill. Wow.
That's great.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Thank you.